everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I'm Belinda Granger, and on the line today, we have definitely the most popular female triathlete in the world, and also, of course, one of the greatest female triathletes in the world right now, and her gorgeous husband. Welcome, Lucy Charles Barclay and Rhys Barclay. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, I'm the one that should be saying thank you. Firstly, because you are giving up your Saturday morning, which I know a lot of triathletes would not do, so I have to thank you for that to start. And also, obviously, for giving me this weekend, a very special weekend. Obviously, it was going to be the weekend of Challenge Roth. We should all be in Germany right now. But unfortunately, due to the craziness that is 2020, we're all stuck at home. But, great to have you on the show, guys.
Oh, yeah, it's strange to think it would be Challenge Roth this weekend. We had, like, an awesome road trip planned. We were actually going to drive over in our VW camper van and make a real sort of journey out of it. And obviously, we love the race. So seeing all the photos from the past 2 years, it's just like, oh, I wish we were there. So it's really, really strange times.
It is. And I didn't realise you're going to do that. How cool. And I've seen pictures of your van. It's very, very cool, I must admit. And it's funny because when I was younger, I used to do a lot of camping with my parents. And then when I was in my 30s, I actually moved away from that sort of traveling. But now that we won't tell anyone that I'm reaching my 50s, I'm really keen to go back to that. And I think it's fantastic. But you guys, you've had your van now for how long? It's not that long, is it, that you've had that cool van?
We pretty much got it after Kona, actually. We flew home and then made a bit of a trip up there to the van company, and they showed us around the van that they kind of custom to Team Charles Barclay. They have like our branding in there, and I know a lot of triathletes have seen it, and it's kind of, I've seen actually a lot of triathletes. Eric and Paula have got an amazing van as well. So vans are pretty cool at the moment. And
They are. I think it's unreal. And it really is the best way to go. Particularly where you guys, you know, are living in Europe, because it's just so easy to get everywhere. Not so much here in Australia. It takes a long time to get anywhere. But, yeah, but still very, very cool. And, of course, Steph Hansen from witsup.com recently did a podcast, I think it was on either Wednesday or Thursday this week, with Felix Walshsurfer, obviously the race director and owner of Challenge Roth. And I have to admit, I'd been in a little bit of denial, sort of pretending this weekend wasn't happening. But I did listen to that podcast today, and just listening to Felix talk and see how emotional that he's getting, it's pretty hard not to be just a little bit sad right now.
Yeah, I mean, Felix is probably one of the loveliest men on the planet. He's just so friendly. He welcomes you like you're his family when you come and race there. And his passion is just so apparent for that race. So, I can only imagine how he's feeling. And obviously all the people that love that race, it's just going to make next year even more special, the fact that we've had to have a year off. So, I mean, we're obviously excited to be going back next year and can't wait for it.
Oh, I know, and I know everyone over there is over the moon that you've already signed up for 2021. That's awesome. Now, Lucy, obviously you've done Roth twice now, your first year, 2018, where I think you had one of the most, well, to me personally, it was the most spectacular female finish I've ever witnessed in the 25-odd years I've been in the sport. I mean, there was a mere 9 seconds separating yourself and Danny Blymell. A truly remarkable race. I think it was 8:43:42 to 8:43:51. So amazing race. You came back last year and it was obvious that you wanted nothing but to win, which I loved. And you did that in fine fashion.
Yeah, I think actually it was only quite recently where all of the Roth stuff has been coming up, obviously because it's this time of year. and they replayed the two different finishes, and I actually had forgotten just how close that finish was with Daniela Blamer. I was like, oh my God, it was literally within touching distance. And I mean, it's definitely what kind of motivated us to go away and be like, you know what, you were so close, we've got to come back and get that win. And obviously Reese and I worked very, very hard towards that, but it is just one of the most amazing finish lines on the circuit. The way that the finish line actually bends round is just so different to anything else. So watching that back, I was like, oh. And then obviously I watched it about 10 times on repeat, me winning the race last year. And I was like, yes, that's what I want. Like, I just need to get back to some racing. And obviously we're both missing racing, as I'm sure every athlete on the planet is. But that is pretty special, that finish line.
There's an interesting story with that that first year in 2018. So I had done the relay that year, and I just finished the bike section, and I was hearing that the ladies' race was really close to the finish. So I was quickly putting my bike in transition, handed my relay timing chip over to my runner, and then was running into the town to try and find the end of the women's race.
Wow.
And I managed to get about 400 meters from the finish line, so just before the ladies got into the stadium.
Yeah.
And I saw Daniela Blemmil come through the crowd with the lead pro woman bike, and she had that I'm absolutely spent look, and I've got 400 meters to go glazed kind of face.
And then
Lucy comes around the corner with the same expression. And they were both like, you know, with the utmost respect to them both, absolutely spent, you could see. And I just screamed at the loudest that I can, saying, go, just go, you can catch her. And then all of a sudden, Lucy just was like, oh, right, I can catch her. And she started sprinting. And I thought that she might have got her, but I couldn't get into the stadium quick enough to see the finish.
So basically, if I'd been 400 meters back, then shouted, it could be a whole different.
Could have been a different story. Exactly.
Yeah. We can blame it on Reese.
We'll blame Reese, but I'll be a selfish person and say I'm so glad, because I think that is the reason you had such an incredible race last year, and really it was perfect, because I've analysed your splits from both years, and obviously your run in 2018 was around the 307, 308 mark, and we all know that you're capable of running faster than that. And you came back last year and ran a sub 3, the only one to go sub 3. So it just shows whatever you went away and did, you and Reese, worked to absolute perfection, because your splits in last year's race they're as near perfect as you're going to get. Brilliant.
Yeah, I think both years I've kind of had sort of stomach issues on the run, to be honest. I've never had the perfect day in Roth, and I always say I don't know if it's because the whole excitement just gets too much. I'm not sure what it is. But I think in that second year, it was just, you know what, nothing was going to stop me. I knew that I was going there and the win was all that I wanted. So I was just going to be getting to that line as quickly as possible, no matter what happened. So there was definitely a fire to get that win last year.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Now, let's go back a bit, because I've met you many times now, you and Reese, and I've seen you at lots and lots of races. But I actually don't know much about your past or Reese's. Now, obviously, we all know that you both come from a swimming background. You're both brilliant swimmers. But, Lucy, I know that we've had quite a few of my friends ask, can you ask Lucy, where did it all start? What did she do back in the day? Was she an athlete from a child? And the same for you too, Reese. What was your background?
Yeah, it's quite funny actually, because their backgrounds are quite different, but I pretty much from about the age of 8, I had a few friends at school that were swimmers, and I joined the same club as them because they obviously enjoyed swimming. And I kind of was just hooked on that kind of tough aspect, that swimming is quite a tough sport, and I just enjoyed that everyday challenge of training and the reward that I got from it. And I, from very, very young, as young as 9 years old, it was the Olympics that I wanted to go to for swimming. I was sort of every day that I was so driven towards doing that. And I guess maybe that's quite unusual for a 9 year old. And then I had a lot of success. I went through swimming at 16. I had quite a lot of national titles and got selected for kind of to go into open water, which was fairly new at the time. There wasn't many swimmers doing it. And it meant that you could go away on lots of different training camps, go abroad. So I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool. I get to go away from home, go on trips. So I'll give that a go and had quite a lot of success in the 5K. And then was sort of, they said, oh, there's a 10K distance as well. And I've always been right. someone that was quite a challenge seeker. And actually, when I was 9 years old, it was the 200 butterfly that I wanted to race because I was like, that's the toughest event. That's the one I want to do. And then at 16 was probably one of the youngest people doing the 10K event and wanting to do the marathon wow. swim. So, and then basically come London 2012, I had two events that I had kind of was looking to try and qualify for the Olympics for, which was the 800 freestyle in the pool, which I made the final of our Olympic trials in London, but obviously that's not enough. I think I finished about eighth, so that wasn't enough to make the team. And then in the open water, I was pretty much second in line to go to the Olympics behind Kerri-Anne Payne, who is one of our great open water swimmers in the UK. And unfortunately, the way the selection criteria worked, they only took one athlete. So it meant that I missed out on doing the home game. So that was pretty tough. And after that, I was quite motivated. I was like, you know what, right, let's go all in. Let's do four more years to see if I can make the next Olympics. And pretty much in 2013, I had one of my most successful years as a swimmer. But I had just lost that love for the sport. I did one of my best ever races, finished it and just had no buzz. And I was like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
And pretty much at the end of that year, that's when Reese and I went on this crazy journey and just signed up for an Ironman distance to decide, you know what, we need a new challenge.
That's
kind of how triathlon happened, really. We'd actually done an open water race up in Scotland. Reese, in fairness to him, actually done really well because he was a sprint athlete. I did terribly. And we went back to the hotel, went on to Ironman UK, signed up for the following year. And that's kind of how it all happened, really. But
Lucy, that was in 2013 when you decided to do, let's just move on to a completely different sport altogether and let's go to the longest distance possible. So that's from 2013 to 2014 is when you did your first Ironman. Is that correct?
Yes, so I think it was probably about August in 2013 we signed up and it was going to be the July 2014 Ironman UK. So we had just under a year to learn as much as we could and train for this crazy event. Very
That's
mad journey.
Insane. That is insane. And before that, I mean, obviously we all run growing up in some capacity, but you'd never really run properly. The same, I'm assuming, for Reese. And you weren't bike riders. So you basically took up biking and running in less than a year to get yourselves ready for an Ironman distance event.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was crazy.
A bit mad, but yeah.
Oh, wow. And Reese, obviously your background was open water swimming as well, not just open water, but swimming and open water swimming as well. And whose idea was it to do triathlon? So whose idea was it to actually, okay, let's do triathlon, let's forget swimming?
It was probably a bit of both, but it was literally just out the blue. I really can't tell you what told me to log on and sign up. It was just before I'd actually clicked apply, like we'd paid the money for the event and committed, I still didn't actually know what the distances were. I just know that I knew that I'd signed up.
That might have been a good thing.
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh my gosh. That's unreal. And so obviously you had just under a year to at least get your swim, biking and running under control. Did you do any other shorter distance triathlon racing before the main event in 2014?
Yeah, so I had done a plan that incorporated a sprint, or a super sprint, a sprint, Olympic, a 70.3,
awesome.
And then the full. So yeah, we kind of done them all in order. And then after the super sprint, it was like, okay, that's not too bad. Let's go on to the sprint. Ticked them off. By the time I got to the 70.3, Lucy didn't actually do the 70.3
distance.
No, I just
didn't want to know. I thought, yeah, that's too hard.
You said, oh, that's it. That's done. I'll just go straight to the main event, thanks.
Yeah, I rang Lucy after the 70.3 and I was like, yeah, I'm not sure we're going to be able to do an Ironman.
I vividly remember that as well. I remember that phone call and he was like, I don't know how anyone races an Ironman. And I was like, oh God.
we're in big trouble. And Reese, were you racing age group at this particular point in time in these races, or were you racing pro?
No, I was very much an age grouper. I was pretty much coming last in my age group as well at that point. it was just survive kind of phase.
Wow. And okay, so fast forward to 2014 and Ironman UK. You both lined up. How was it?
Well, we lost each other actually at the start.
Oh, yeah, no. I just remember like 15 minutes before the start, I was like, where the hell's Reese? And then I don't think I actually saw you before the start. So we were like, oh, that's good. Well, hopefully we'll see each other out on the course. And I think we did see each other out on the course.
11 hours in, we finally saw each other. And then I think I spent that whole 11 hours going, I wonder if she's okay. And then I finally saw her on like the last lap of the run. And I think that was when I was like, all right, okay, this isn't too bad then. She's all right, I'm all right, we're going to finish.
Well, I'm thinking about it. This has to be one of the fastest rises, you know, rise to fame that I've ever come across in our sport, Lucy. That's just, it's incredible to think that was in 2014 and we roll forward now, I mean, to 2020. That's incredible to think that you are now, you know, up there in the greatest triathletes in the world.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I think a lot of the time it doesn't really sink in. It's not until we kind of sit there and think, oh, actually, that wasn't really that long ago that we were doing that first Ironman. And actually, I think because it wasn't that long ago, I still feel like I'm that real novice athlete because everything's progressed so quickly. I still feel like I'm the chopper out on the bike that doesn't really know what she's doing. So, but then I have to kind of think, actually, no, like, I'm producing pretty good times now. I must know what I'm doing. And obviously I've got a great coach sat next to me here that is definitely, I'm under his watchful eye and he definitely knows what he's doing. So, at times it's hard to realise how far we have come in such a short time.
Oh, it's incredible. And honestly, Reese, I think this has got to be one of the most successful triathlon coaching / marriage relationships that's ever occurred in our sport. I mean, you're with Lucy the whole time, and I wanted to really talk about that because obviously you're a couple, you're married, you're also Lucy's coach. Just how tough does that get at times? I'm sure there are times when it's amazing and it all clicks, but, you know, when one or the other's having a bad day, how tough does it get though?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. Pretty much every time Lucy has an injury or a setback, it's like I've had one too, because I have to live through that with her. I've been quite fortunate in that I haven't had too many injuries, but Lucy's had a couple of things over the years, and those times have been really tough when we've made absolutely massive progress and then all of a sudden you're derailed by something out of your control when you can't really rush an injury. So those are the low points, and I certainly feel those with her. But I don't claim to be some mastermind. I've just basically learned as I go along, read the right books, listened to the right people and put my own spin on things. And it just seems to be working what we're doing. So, yeah, we're sticking to that at the moment. Oh. And it's quite a good relationship, really, isn't it? It's really, really working out. So,
yeah, I think one of the key things with both of us is we're able to make fun of ourselves and not take ourselves too seriously.
Too seriously,
and also apply that to training at times as well. So, yeah, we can be very serious with our training, but we also can make it fun, go on adventures with our training, do long rides, or just say, actually, we just fancy going there and doing a training session or whatever. So we're trying to just keep it fun. And actually, that was the key reason we came into triathlon, was we lost the love of swimming. It was no longer fun, and we wanted to come into a sport and have fun with it. And actually, I think that's probably why we've had a lot of success, is because we're actually just enjoying the journey and trying to keep it as fun as possible.
Yeah, I think pretty much all of our big training sessions are, you know, like, we look at what we got to do, and okay, if it's going to be a 6-hour ride with a brick run, that's going to be horrible. How can we make that interesting?
I remember those sessions. They were tough to keep interesting by the end of my career. I was like, oh, another one. No. And you know, it's obvious that you have a great attitude, and you know, you can see that whatever you are doing, it is working to a T. But Reese, obviously you're racing now as a professional athlete as well as Lucy. How difficult is that? Because obviously when Lucy's getting ready for a race, and let's say you're both racing the same event together, you know, you're going into race having to think about Lucy and her race, but also your own. Is it difficult? I know this is quite new because you haven't been racing as a professional athlete for that long, but is it difficult to do, or you don't mind? And I hate to say this, but I know that it's happened with a couple of athletes. It's almost like Lucy's number one, and then you're playing second fiddle when you race. I mean, it's just the way it is. Is this the way you look at it, or are you just like, okay, Lucy's good enough now to look after herself? She can take care of her own race, and I'm gonna concentrate on myself. And I'm not being cruel here, but it's just, you know, the life of a professional triathlete, it can be quite a selfish one. We all know that. Have you actually experienced it where you've been on the same race line together, and you've just had to say, okay, I can't worry about Lucy today, I need to focus on myself and my own race?
That's a loaded question, Belinda.
Yeah, I know. I told you there'd be a couple of hard ones, just a couple.
No, it's a brilliant question, and it's something we've discussed a few times. The biggest time I can really think where I was being completely just not in my own race at all was actually Challenge Gran Canaria.
And
I was doing the best race I'd done for the time. I was leading all of the age groupers. It was Lucy's first professional, one of her first professional races, I think maybe your second professional race.
Yeah, second.
And all of a sudden I was riding along the bike, and I noticed that Lucy had made a jump on Daniela Reef and was in front of Daniela Reef.
Wow.
And all of a sudden I just completely snapped out of my race and was just focused on what was going on in the women's race. And it happened to be a very out and back course there, so you could see on each lap what was happening. And then, of course, Emma Pallant was then closing on Lucy. So there was a massive fight going on in the women's race. And I was trying to get the splits of how far in front of Daniela Reef was Lucy, and how quick was Emma Pallant closing, and trying to relay that information back to Lucy. Like trying to help out, not even realizing I was still actually having a brilliant race of my own. Every time I saw Lucy, I was getting like an adrenaline rush. And after that race, I realized that Lucy ended up finishing second to Emma Pallant, and they had another little sprint finish on
six
the car.
Seconds.
6 seconds. Yeah, that number haunts you, doesn't it?
Like 6 seconds. Wow.
So I got to the end of that race and realized that I hadn't even thought about that I'd had a good race. I was just completely absolved in Lucy's race. And for that reason, that year, I probably could have made the jump to professional, but I decided that actually, you know what, Lucy's, and that was the beginning of Lucy's, you know, breakthrough, really. She had
breakthrough in her career. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. That year was the year she went on to finish second place on her debut at pro race in Kona. So I stayed age grouper for that year for that reason, to be honest. I was like, I'm enjoying what I'm doing, but I need to focus on, and I'll be honest, it was mainly because of financial reasons. At the time, we had no money, and Lucy was all of a sudden making a lot of money from doing so well in her races. And it was just a smart decision for us to just say, okay, well, I'll just hold back on my career a bit. And then fast forward, actually, the year I went professional, which was the year after that, everything changed. Lucy had then gone on and done very well in lots of races. And then, of course, you've got the business side of triathlon took over and the contracts were coming in. Sponsorship wasn't that hard to find anymore. And I turned professional, but also then became sort of Lucy's manager in some ways. I was dealing in with all of the sponsorship, trying to take all of the pressure off of her with travel arrangements and obligations in terms of making sure she's doing everything that she needs to be doing. And it got very stressful for me to make sure that she was doing everything she needed to be doing. At the same time, I turned pro and actually my training went backwards. Yeah, so it wasn't the best year for me in that regard. And I think that looking back on that now, I shouldn't have done that. And then thankfully, our manager came along, Evan, who I believe you know.
Of course, good old Ev, yes.
And took all that pressure off of me doing it. And now we're very happy. He deals with everything for Lucy and me on the occasion. Yeah. And I can focus on my on myself a bit. And we've also brought on a member of staff, so to speak, a guy called Paz, who I believe you know as well. He completely,
lovely guy, yep.
Yeah, he basically holds our hand and nannies us all the time now. We just train.
Wrong
with that. Yeah.
He's a real handyman. We get him doing everything.
Yeah. The thing is with triathlon,
hey, everyone needs one of them. Everyone needs a handyman. But that's one thing I've noticed with you, particularly over the last couple of years, obviously, as Lucy's become one of the greatest female triathletes on this planet right now, is you have an amazing core team around you. I mean, obviously, with yourselves, with Evan and Paz, and I've obviously seen firsthand what Paz does at races, and it's even for someone like me, when I'm at a race and I need Lucy somewhere at a certain time, I know I can go straight to Paz, and it gets done. For example, setting up this interview today, straight to Paz. So he is fantastic, and I know you've recently brought on your sister to do some photography as well, so you really have a great core team. And I know a lot of the top triathletes now, you know, if they can get a great core team working with them, it seems to pay off in dividends. You know, obviously Jan Frodeno is another example who has an amazing core team around him, and it just seems to means that you, Lucy, can and Reese can concentrate on your training and racing, which is what you're best at.
Yeah, I think the thing that's a real shame, I guess, is that we actually brought Paz on probably about a year ago, and Reese has really been able to focus a lot more on his training thanks to Paz taking that pressure off of him. But we're just waiting for Reese to have a race now because he's been able to train all this time. And he's definitely made a massive gain. So hopefully he'll have a race soon where he can show the world what he's capable of.
Well, look, in talking about racing, it is looking, and I never like to say for sure because I don't think anything in 2020 is going to be for sure, but it is looking likely that there will be some racing, particularly in Europe, at the back end of the year. I know that Challenge have got a couple of events. Challenge Davos is definitely going ahead, and it's looking likely with Salou and Gran Canaria. So fingers crossed that they do go ahead. But, yeah, it has been a crazy year. I think it's the first time for me in about 20 years that I have not I got to travel once at the beginning of the season, and that's it. So it's been such a bizarre time for all of us. But speaking about racing, Lucy and Reese, because I know you've both been doing this, let's talk a little bit about the virtual racing. Now, obviously, back in the day when I was racing, this did not exist ever. you know, we didn't have Zwift or any of this virtual racing. But I know, Lucy, you've been loving it. You've been doing quite a bit of the virtual racing throughout this time. And what are your thoughts? Has it been something that's really helped? Because I know, Lucy, we all know you love to race. I you can see it when you line up at the start line. That is why you are who you are, because you thrive on racing. And I love actually watching you before a race because you're like have you watched Iditarod, the husky dogs when they're getting ready to take off on them?
Yeah.
That's you, you know, and you're just chomping for that gun to go off. And I love it because that's what we're supposed to be doing. You should have that love for racing. Has this sort of quenched a bit of that, that thirst for racing with the virtual?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we do a lot of our training indoors. So actually being locked down and being indoors is kind of how we live our life anyway. And we are people who use Zwift a lot for our training. And when I'm doing 5-6 hour trainer rides, that's what I'm doing. I'm on Zwift. So I feel like I know the platform quite well, but I hadn't done a huge amount of racing on there. We do a national champs race and I'd done that before and done quite well. But actually to have a series where it's all the best triathletes in short course and long course racing together, we've never done that before. So it was really cool to see and actually to have so many of the top athletes lining up. But to begin with, it was kind of just, I was just going all in, putting out all the power all the time and just smashing myself to try and win. And then I would watch Reese race and be like, hang on, Reese, you're doing this a lot smarter than I am. You put the effort down, then you'll sit in the pack and then do really well. So I was like, right, I'm going to watch Reese and learn how to do this. And I think that really did pay off when we started to get more and more of the top girls coming to race. I was
coming
like, oh,
towards
okay.
it to do it.
I know where to put the power down now. I know where I can have a little rest. And it's been really good, actually, because it brought the gaming element in as well. There's power-ups. There's all sorts going on that it made it a race, but also a game. And you got an amazing training stimulus from it as
session
well. It's
out,
just hour of going hard. So it's definitely kept us going. Obviously, we can't wait for real racing, but it's been something to keep us motivated, apart from when they made our race about 8 p.m. in the evening. But actually, I know I won't complain because I think the Aussies had it worse than us.
We did. Yeah, I know Sarah Crowley was getting up at some extraordinary time to go. I'm like, you're crazy. But again, she said it was worth doing because it was just so much fun and it was motivating. And even if it meant that for the next week she was on a high because it was so much fun and it was a way to see all you guys again. You know, she's used to racing against all you ladies. And it was, she had nothing but good things to say about it, which is interesting because, you know, there's one prominent coach out there, and I won't mention any names, but I'm sure everyone can guess who I'm talking about, who almost thinks that it's a bit of a waste of time, which is quite interesting. But, you know, I mean, each to their own for sure, absolutely. But from everyone I've spoken to, from all the professional athletes I've spoken to, and I know, you know, my good friends here in Noosa, Luke and Beth McKenzie, and they're not even, Luke's not even racing anymore, and he still loves it. He still gets on and he says, if it gets me out of bed and it gets me on the bike and training, then I'm all for it. So I think there's definitely a lot more positives from this virtual racing than negatives, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, anything that motivates you during this time is worth it, because I think at times it can definitely be hard to find motivation at the moment when we're not sure exactly when that race is going to be. If we've got something, like you said, that gets us out of bed, gets us on the bike, gets us working hard, then it can only be good.
No, I totally agree. And speaking of which, we have to talk about your pain cave, because obviously I'm a little bit of a gym junkie these days. And when I first saw your pain cave, I was so jealous. It's unbelievable. How long have you had it set up? Like, it's absolutely schmick. When did you actually first set that pain cave up?
Oh, Risa, you can tell this story.
Yeah,
I remember being about 4 years old and walking the bricks of that building from the front to the back of the house for a bit of pocket money each weekend. We built that as part of my dad's boxing garage. He was a professional boxer.
Was he? Wow.
So towards the sort of end of his career, he wanted to build himself a gym where he could train, but also train other people. For the longest time, it was a boxing gym with a boxing ring and some punch bags and stuff. And you can still see remnants of that. Of course, there's still the boxing ring in there.
Boxing ring, that's right.
But slowly over time, we took over it, really, which he reminds us of every day.
Oh, that's hilarious. Wow.
It's funny, we think of that as our gym, but every now and again my dad comes in and goes, oh, this is my gym, this isn't your gym.
We are slowly reminding. But Reese's dad did do his first ever half distance last year. So he's also a triathlete now, so he can't complain at the triathlon setup, because it definitely helped him do his first half Ironman race.
Oh, that's unreal. So it's all in the family now. I love it. Very cool. Very cool. Well, it is. I mean, I love looking at pictures, and obviously when you guys are training there. And what I love the most, obviously this is not so much of a triathlete. I mean, most people love the setup of Zwift, et cetera, that you have, but I love all the free weights. So, Lucy and Reese, how important is strength training in your program? Obviously, to see how much Lucy's improved over the bike in such a short amount of time, I'm assuming that strength program is quite an important part of your weekly program.
Yeah, when we was swimming, strength and conditioning was just a huge part.
Huge,
of swimming.
Of course.
And yeah, we used to lift probably 3 or 4 times a week on that program. So we knew the benefits of strength and conditioning even before we knew what triathlon was. And we basically just carried that through. We figured if it's going to be beneficial for swimming, we can probably tweak it to be beneficial for the others. And, you know, we've been lifting weights in some shape or form since both of us were about, I don't know, what, 11, 12 years old, really.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for us to continue that all the way through. And mostly now it's all about less strength and more conditioning. It's more about just making sure we're keeping injuries at bay, balancing out probably some uneven muscle groups, making sure that everything is nice and balanced and aligned, rather than, you know, back when we were swimmers, it was all about just generating raw power.
Of course,
it's less about that now. It's more about the conditioning side of things. And we're forever tweaking and changing our strength and conditioning program. It's become quite a hybrid of things that we've done for the last 10 years, but it's something we both love. And we always say that if we weren't triathletes, we'll probably be CrossFitters, because that's what
I love it. Me too.
We probably can't even say CrossFit anymore. It's we're not allowed to say CrossFit.
That's right.
But we do love that style of training, and sometimes we'll throw that in to mix things up a bit.
That's good though. I mean, I honestly, back in the day when I was training, and we're talking way back now, it was basically just swim, bike, run, and we really didn't do a lot of specific strength and conditioning training. And it's only when I fast forward now and I think, if only I'd done that, I think particularly for an endurance event where it's all about holding form for as long as possible. So it definitely has its place in our sport, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I think Dave Scott and Mark Allen, one of them was really into weights. I think it might have been Dave Scott.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so he was leagues in front of his competition at the time, so perhaps he had that advantage over everyone. I think most triathletes now, they do strength and conditioning, so it's probably an even playing field. You're probably disadvantaged if you don't nowadays, rather than jump in the competition.
Totally agree. Now, talking about racing, obviously one of the races, we've talked about Challenge Roth, which is supposed to be on this weekend, not happening till 2021 now. Another race that we thought we might be able to pull off was obviously the championship in Slovakia, in Samarin, Slovakia. And, of course, this year was also, along with the PTO, was going to be the first running of the Collins Cup, which I was so intrigued to watch, because I think it was such an amazing concept and a brand new concept for triathlon. And then, of course, that was cancelled. But Lucy, talking about the championship, obviously Challenge Family have had that 3 times now, 2017, 18 and 19, and you have won all 3, which is truly incredible. So it's obviously a race that you like, and it certainly likes you. Are you looking forward to finally doing the championship, well, not doing the championship, but doing the Collins Cup next year?
Yeah, definitely. I was so excited for the Collins Cup. It was just obviously a completely new format, and I know that I love that course in Samarin.
Exactly.
It suits me to a T. I've loved it every year. I've had different races every year, but always come out on top. So it was somewhere that I was really excited to go back to, actually be part of Team Europe in this new format as well. So girls that I normally have to race against, who I'm like, oh God, I've got to race these girls, were actually going to be on my team.
In a team.
So, so that was pretty cool. I mean, I can't wait for it next year. I think it's going to be one of those races where everyone's going to talk about it for ages, because it's different. Everyone's going to want to watch it. And we actually spoke to Sam Renoff, and he kind of spoke us through the whole format and told us how it's going to work, how they were going to intro athletes, keep the crowd engaged. They'd really thought through everything. So obviously it's such a shame that it's not happening this year, but obviously it's just more excitement for next year and getting to do all these races again.
Definitely. And of course, we're still hoping, fingers crossed, that Challenge Daytona, so the PTO World Championship, will take place at the end of the year. I know it's a very big unknown at the moment, just with everything that's going on, but, you know, a $1 million prize purse, which I'm sure every single pro on this planet right now would love to have the opportunity to line up and at least be in it, as they say, to win it. But that's another race. Is that still a race that you are looking to do? I mean, obviously with race schedules right now, nothing is a guaranteed, a sure thing. But I still think it's important that you need to have some sort of a race schedule in place just in case.
Yeah, with athletes, we're used to just working towards a goal. So we're kind of working as if that race is definitely happening. All our training is tailored towards that happening. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't. But for us, you kind of just have to put that at the back of your mind and go, you know what, it's happening. We're doing our training for it. It's going to keep us motivated. Obviously, it's a mega prize purse. So I think it's definitely worth making the trip if we can. And yeah, we loved Challenge Daytona when we went there. Actually, that was our last race. So it may have been our last race. It might be our first race back. So,
oh, wow. So, I didn't think of that. That's interesting. Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, we loved it, actually. We went there quite relaxed. We'd obviously come off of Kona and had a bit of a break and were thinking it's kind of almost a bit of a destination holiday race, completely different racing under the floodlights on the speedway, and really loved it, actually. It was a great trip. So yeah, if we can get to go there in December, do this major race, yeah, we'll definitely try and be there.
And of course, you're currently sitting in second place in the PTO rankings behind Daniela Reef. So obviously, if you do go over and race and you happen to pull off a win, it'll be great for the rankings for yourself, obviously. But the I'm assuming the $1 million prize purse is the game changer. Now, speaking of which, and I'm putting you on the spot a bit here, Lucy and Reese, obviously things looking the way they are, there may be a chance that you would have to quarantine on the way home. Do you think, just I'd like to get the opinion of one of the best pro athletes in the world, would that be something you'd be willing to do to get in a big-time race?
Yeah, I mean, we actually spent 7 weeks officially in quarantine
indoors,
in our gym,
course.
So we'd just probably move back in there and we'd be fine. We can spend 2 weeks in there. But I mean, if we win the big time, I don't think we're going to mind just sitting indoors for 2 weeks. We could probably
chilling out
to,
indoors.
So
yeah, we just spend it.
We could get another few dogs, couldn't we?
Amazon's
true.
Still delivering, aren't they? So.
I don't know if Amazon deliver dogs, but
I think anything's possible these days. Oh my gosh, it's crazy. But Ian, speaking about, so you actually did move into your gym, didn't you? So when things got pretty nasty in the UK, you actually moved yourself from the house into the gym for 2 weeks.
Yeah. We formed like a little defensive bubble at my mum's house. We figured, like, well, no one's going anywhere. The only place we need to be really is training in the gym. Why don't we just move our bed in here and stay in here? And then we know everyone's safe. No one's going out, coming into contact with people that might potentially have it. We got all of our sort of food delivered. The only thing we went out for every now and again was to walk the dog. And we figured that would be the safest. And we live in London, so it's very densely populated. We don't have the freedom of, you know, fields and stuff around us. So it was like the safest thing to do at the time. And during that time, there was so much uncertainty with everything that we just figured that would be the best approach to take, and it was all right, actually.
We actually weirdly enjoyed it, didn't we?
Yeah,
it
was apart from getting woken up by foxes jumping on the roof at 5 a.m.
Oh yeah, and there was a cat that meowed really early every morning, but that was quite a good alarm clock. And then
alarm clock to get
up.
You up out of bed.
Yeah.
Love it. And now, of course, it's obviously the UK rules have relaxed a little and you're able to travel, so you're actually not in London at the moment, are you? Where are you at the moment?
Yeah, so we just travelled down to the southwest of the UK, a place called Cornwall. It's lovely round here for everyone who has been or doesn't know it. It's like the kind of picture postcard of Great Britain or UK that you would see. Lots of rolling hills and coastline and stuff. So we've come down here in the van for a week where we can get some training in a different kind of scenery. And we've basically been looking forward to this all year, and finally as of today we've been allowed to do it, so we're here.
Yeah, we were supposed to be Yeah,
well, Lola's with you too, though, isn't she?
Of course, Lola's here. We've actually been working on a few things with Lola. So we've got a Canny Cross lead, so we can run with her. Probably the smallest Canny Cross dog, but she's got some speed on her.
I bet she does. So,
we also rigged her up. She has a little GoPro on her harness, so when she runs with us, she can film us from her little head view, which we tested out yesterday on the way down, and it worked pretty well, didn't it?
That's awesome. I can't wait to see footage. That's gonna be, I mean, my husband and I run with our dogs probably 3 or 4 times a week, and we absolutely love, they love it, as you know, I've spoken about many times. And our friends see us out there, and we're the laughing stock, of course, of Noosa with it, but they love it. It's a way of getting out there, and it's unreal. Now, how far have you actually run with her so far?
I mean, she would run and run and run, and she is, we've taken her down the track. We've got a grass track that we can actually go and use at the moment, and we'll have like 100-meter head start and call her, and we can't even make it to 150 meters before she's got us. But
she's got you.
she's done about 12K, hasn't she?
Yeah,
at a steady pace, she's come 12K with us, and at the end, she still wants more. So I think she would just keep going. So yeah.
now, where did this love? I mean, obviously, I've got my 2 dogs and they're my 2 babies. Where did your love for dogs come from? Did you grow up with dogs, both of you, or this is just something that's happened over the years?
Yeah, I've always had a dog. Dog lover from day one, really.
Yeah, I've pretty much grown up with dogs. My mum and dad loved dogs. My mum and dad had dogs growing up. And actually, my nan passed away in 2013, I think it was. It was actually a really strange time when pretty much I said I didn't want to swim anymore, and she happened to pass away that night and was my biggest fan. I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but we ended up having her dog because my granddad's, it was a bit hard for my granddad to have her. So, and we just fell in love with her, and she's a Jack Russell Cross. And she's a great little dog. She's actually getting quite old now, but she still runs with my mum and dad. And I think that's where we thought, actually, she's quite a hardy little dog. She'll run. And that's where we thought, actually, I think a Jack Russell would be a good dog
for
us.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. And, of course, she's got her own Insta site, she's got more followers than most pro athletes. I think she's got something like, she's got over 9,000 followers, which is insane. She's a very, very popular little dog, that's for sure.
She's got her own sponsorship deals.
I can understand it. Oh, it's crazy.
She probably had one of the quickest rises in followers. We set up her account, and in about 12 hours, she had 5,000 followers.
I think
most people obviously knew the story around Kona and my finish position and getting dogs. So she was the result of... I had to come back and get Sarah Crowley to get Lola. So I have to say thank you to Sarah for that.
I love it. And, of course, Sarah's got 2 beagles. She's a dog. She loves dogs as well. So she would appreciate and understand this very well. Now, talking about followers, and this is probably the touchiest subject that we'll get onto today. I did warn you there'd be 1 or 2 harder questions to answer. Now, Lucy, you know, you've got something like 325,000 followers on Instagram, and you are definitely the most popular triathlete, female triathlete in the world, if not triathlete. I think, you know, I think maybe Jan Frodeno is the only one offhand that I can think of that may have a few more followers. And the reason I bring this up is because obviously back in the day, particularly back when I was racing, I think Facebook was around, obviously, but that was about it. Twitter had just started to become popular. And it wasn't until I was actually getting out of the sport that Instagram popped up. And I distinctly remember Michael Lovato was the first pro triathlete I knew that set himself up with an Insta account. And I remember thinking, oh, this is just silly. It won't last. It's just photos, whatever. How wrong could I be? Now I think about it, and pretty much every contract you would sign would have some sort of social media commitment involved. So the way it has changed, it is a huge chunk of being a professional athlete right now.
Yeah, I mean, it seems silly. And obviously, like back in the day, you'd probably think, what is all this new world?
I did. But, I did.
Yeah. And it is like triathlon is a full-time job, hence why we've ended up bringing staff on, and I've got my sister who really helps me with all my media, getting the shots, so we can tell our story day on day, and it really is part of the process. And I think I'm quite lucky because I actually do enjoy it, and that's probably why I'm so active on there, because I do enjoy kind of sharing my story. And I actually studied photography, so I always I'm like, oh, that would be a really cool shot, Holly, we could try this, which I think is why I love working with my sister doing it. But I did actually work in marketing for about a year when I quit swimming and was doing my first triathlon stuff, and I needed a job, so I ended up working in marketing at a local zoo, which kind of combined my love of animals and social media. So I think that helped me quite a lot. And also I remember being in Kona as an age grouper for the first year, and someone had made a comment when I was trying to get sponsors, because it's so hard to get sponsors in the early days, and they were like, well, you just wouldn't know how to market yourself, so that's probably why. And I was like, right, I can market myself, and I'm going to show you that I can. And I think definitely a lot of time has gone into it, but I just try and be as genuine as I can and tell my story and have a bit of fun and try and inspire particularly young women to give sport a go. That's what I'm trying to achieve.
I think because we've not long been pro, and it wasn't that long ago we was age groupers as well, I think we're quite relatable to we still think of ourselves as very novice in the sport, and sometimes it comes across and we might capture a funny moment that perhaps doesn't paint us in the best professional light. We might have made a few mistakes, but we're like, do you know what? That'd be quite funny. Put that on Instagram, and I'm pretty sure other people would have made that mistake too and could relate to it. And I think that's probably why you've got quite a lot of followings. People can
relate
to it. Yeah, they relate to you. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I know for a lot of young women out there, particularly with the battle braids, which was a really cool concept, and that's just huge now around the world, and I love it. But with all the amazing things, and Lucy, you really have done some incredible things for females in sport and for the sport in general, and that's, you know, obviously why you are so loved. But one of the things that really gets me upset about social media is, as many fantastic outcomes from it, you also get the other side where you open yourself up to be absolutely to be criticized. And I know there have been some posts in the past where every person's been able to get on and give their opinion, and that's fine, everyone's entitled to their opinion, that's social media, we all know that. But how do you and Reese cope? And I mean, obviously Reese, you can see some of these comments can be pretty hard hitting at times, and it must be tough for you to see someone writing about your wife in this manner. And is it something that you discuss together and you move beyond together, or is there times when it really does get you down?
I think we're quite lucky. We're quite thick-skinned.
You know,
sometimes if someone makes a really, really nasty comment, very rarely do we actually look at them comments and think, oh, well, you know, get upset by them. But if we do, nine times out of ten, you can go on their Facebook or go on their Instagram and find something just as funny
exactly.
that you think you could perhaps comment back, but you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. That's right. But
I really don't think it phases us too much. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, and you know, we're pretty thick-skinned, and if they want to take the mic and say some nasty things, let them do it.
Nine times out of ten
as well, a lot of people jump on your defence.
We are very lucky in that a lot of the time I don't even have to comment back. Someone will have done it for me. And,
for you, yeah,
that's
which is
quite
perfect.
Nice,
so, it's perfect, that's right. Yeah, and I think it's like for every one negative comment, you've got about 30 positive. So, yeah, I don't think you've got a problem in that department, that's for sure. But it is an interesting concept because, you know, for a lot of pro athletes back in the day, this just was not something they had to deal with. It was so much easier, just swim, bike, run, go to races, do some social media at the races, then come home, and that was it. But now it's this constant and very important part of being a professional athlete. And, I was just interested, obviously, because you are the most popular athlete, just interested to see how you did cope with it. But, yeah, you're doing an incredible job. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, thanks. I think, I mean, obviously, I feel for a lot of people as well, because it can be a nasty world of social media. So you do have to be quite thick skinned. And actually the best thing to do is to not comment back, because then they don't get the satisfaction of causing an argument and actually getting any attention on that person. So I just can't really understand it, though. I've never dream of, even if I didn't really like someone, I'd never dream of commenting something horrible on their post.
I feel exactly the same. Yeah, I'm exactly the same. And that doesn't mean that I haven't commented on someone before, just said something out loud, but to actually write something, it's just, it baffles me. It really does.
Yeah.
Now we have to talk about Kona. We have to talk about the Ironman World Championships, because as you said, you turned up there for the first time ever and finished second, which, you know, for most people, that's just never, ever going to happen. And maybe being a little naive when you first went there was a good thing, because you could obviously just go there and just race, which is what you're so good at. But just talk me through, obviously, 2017. How was that when you got there? Did you expect it to be as big as it was?
I mean, we went to Kona in 2015 as age groupers.
Yeah.
And so we did know the course, but obviously we were just going there to finish and enjoy the journey like most age groupers are. But then to go back in 2017, we went there a little bit with that kind of attitude. You know what, it's your first pro race, go there, see what you can do. We obviously know I've got a great swim, I'm getting stronger on the bike and the run is progressing as well. But I'd set the target of, you know what, it would be amazing to finish top 10. And to begin with, well, it's just amazing to qualify as a pro for Kona. So to get in the top 10 was definitely something that we set. We worked really, really hard. We went out to Club La Santa in Lanzarote. We did a great camp out there and we just enjoyed working towards it. I'm definitely someone who prefers racing in hot climates. I don't like the cold, so it definitely suits me to go and race somewhere hot. But yeah, I think until I win that race, that year will be my favourite year without a doubt, because I just was so ecstatic. Crossing that line, I was just, could not believe it that I'd managed to get second in my first pro race there. And the hardest thing was that Reese was actually racing, and I think a few things had gone wrong in the race, and I just wanted to have Reese at the finish line, and I think you were still out on the course.
That was the next example of when Lucy's race overtook my one. It's just like, I can't explain. I'm going down the Queen K thinking, I was actually leading the entire age group race at that point, which is a big deal as an age group.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big deal.
And then all of a sudden, we get to Harvey and the lead, you see the helicopters in the distance, all the pro men come flying past. So that distracts you a little bit and you think, oh, that was cool. I wonder how Lucy's getting on. And you don't expect her to have a 4-minute lead over Daniela Reef.
No.
And then pretty much after that point, that was it. I was that my Kona race was like, I was just distracted by what is going on with Lucy's race. How is she winning? What is happening? And then after that, I got 3 punches anyway. So that was my race over.
Oh, no. Oh, crazy. And then, of course, next year you come back again, 2018, you do the same thing again. And leading these races for majority of the day, Lucy, I mean, it's crazy. When I actually just went back and had a look at your races and where the amount of time you led the World Championships and, you know, just to get run down. And then, of course, last year, not with Danny, but with Annie Hug, truly incredible. So that record alone, to be second 3 times in a row, as frustrating as I'm not going to lie, as frustrating as I'm sure it is for you, it's still pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think the first year, obviously, I came second. And when I went back the next year, I wanted to prove, because a lot of people thought, who is this girl? That's probably a bit of a fluke. And
it's a fluke.
I wanted
you don't
to
fluke
prove,
Kona.
Yeah. I wanted to prove that, you know what, no, this is who I am and this is what I'm about. And obviously, yeah, it is frustrating to come second 3 times, but it's so difficult to even do that, because every year the field is progressing, the girls are getting stronger. And actually, I've had to put down a better performance every single year
every
still
time.
To come second. So I'm so hungry to get that win there. And I know it's going to happen. I know that we're going to make it happen. But I think last year was the most agonizingly close to be about 10 miles into that run and get overtaken. It was like, and I know the kind of level of runner that Annie is, and to kind of, I thought, you know what, it's going to be ridiculous to come back round her. So, and then I knew that Sarah was closing as well. And actually I had to dig deep to go back round her in those last few miles, it was worth it. We got the dog. But yeah, that race is, that race is something else. And, we're going to crack it. I know we are.
And Lucy, what is it with you women from Great Britain? Because you are doing extraordinary things. I mean, your story reminds me a little bit of Chrissy Wellington when she came from, and I know that year she came and she won and everyone's like, who is this person? Like, nobody knew who she was. And she just killed it. And I think of all the amazing female athletes, Rachel Joyce, Jody Swallow, Chrissy, yourself, I mean, Laura Siddle, there's so many amazing athletes out of Great Britain, and you are truly paving the way for this distance. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think there's something about the Brits. We are pretty tough. If you stay in the UK and train, it is very tough to train here, you've particularly got to be tough, in the winter, the or you're just pounding it indoors. It's just, it makes you tough. And there's so many great athletes. It just spurs you on. I mean, obviously, I was super inspired by the likes of Chrissy and Lucy Gossage, who I love, and Rachel Joyce.
Lucy's amazing.
They all inspired me when I came into triathlon. And I kind of thought, you know what, I hope that I can inspire others as well and kind of play the role that they had on me.
There's also an element of, you don't get any support from British Triathlon as a long distance athlete, and that's not a dig.
Yep.
I'm just saying that if you're a long distance athlete, you've got to be doing it because you absolutely want to do it,
love it,
and you love it because you don't get any help. I think that's a big element in why you're seeing so many of these amazing athletes from the UK doing so well, because they're doing it because they want to do it, not because they're getting any help in any shape or form. So it's bred kind of this pure athlete that just is doing it for the love of doing long distance.
No,
you can actually see it. And as I said, you know, when I'm at races, and I often get that little time for about that 10 minutes before race start, and I get to look at the faces of the professional athletes. And one thing that I've, as I said before, that I've noticed time and time again with Lucy is that you can just see that the absolute love for racing, that it is absolutely where you want to be. There's nowhere else you'd rather be. You can see it. And I think that's what separates you from quite a few other athletes. I think there are athletes, pro athletes out there that love to train, love the idea of being a professional athlete and traveling the world, but they're actually shit scared of racing, I have to say. And I think once the gun goes, it all settles down, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
But the look that you see in your eyes compared to others, it's a completely different look. I love it.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely, I love to train, but I live to race, like racing. Yep, I just get me on that start line and I just want to let loose every time. So
I love that.
It's made it a difficult year this year, but it's actually made me kind of reignite that love for training and why I do that as well. So I think it's been good in a way, but I definitely can't wait to race.
Oh, and look, and the great thing with you both is, as you said, you're still so young in the sport. I mean, you're young anyway, but you're certainly young as far as the sport goes. So I always say, I was talking to Josh Amberger the other day, and he's like, well, I'm still really young. He goes, I'm fine. He goes, yes, I miss racing. He's another athlete that loves to race. But as he said, you know, Belinda, this has given me a chance to just calm down, take a step backwards, concentrate on some other things. I'm still young. I've got plenty of years ahead of me. And it was such a great attitude. I thought for such a young guy, he's got such a wise head on his shoulders. And I think, you know, you guys are the same. You've got plenty of years left to race. So, yeah, we just forget 2020 ever existed and we move straight on to 2021, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan.
Listen, I won't keep you guys much longer. I know you've literally just got to your new training destination for a while. I'm sure you guys are itching to get out there and either go for a run or a ride, which you are now allowed to do, which is great. And thank you both so much for talking to me today. I know that you have got that many fans that'll be dying to listen. So big thank you to both Reese and Lucy. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks, Belinda. Yeah, it's been great to talk to you and relive some of our memories as well, which has been nice this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. And I am definitely looking forward to seeing you at the next race, maybe at the end of the year. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed. That'll be great.
Fingers crossed. Love it. Thanks, guys. I'll speak to you soon. Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.